Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Ryan Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. The front page of today's New York Times calls this a watershed year in the battle over legal marijuana. Now that Colorado and Washington State have passed referenda legalizing recreational use, the Times reports that more than half the states this year are looking at proposals for some degree of legalization or decriminalization for medical or recreational use. This is music to the ears of my next guests, Allison Martin and Nooshin Rashidian, journalists and authors of the book A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. Nooshin, Allison, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us.
And you've written largely a history book here on the history of marijuana prohibition, and we'll go through some of that very interesting storyline. But the Times today seems to back up the conclusion you come to that the prohibition era is ending in both Democratic and Republican-leaning states alike. What kind of moment do you think we're at right now?
This is definitely a turning point, and not one that I think most people could have seen coming. When we started reporting on this book in 2009, we weren't aware that we were witnessing the end of a prohibition. That didn't become apparent until we were driving across the country. We spent 8 months on the road reporting for this book, going to all the various states with cannabis laws. And it was only then, actually, in California's failure, that we realized that we were about to witness a movement toward legalization, because California, though it didn't succeed, revealed support that no one knew was there, revealed coalitions no one knew were there with the, you know, NAACP, unions. And so it was, but still, even then, I don't think we would have said that things would have turned around this quickly.
The coalitions are interesting. And the Times notes that the two states considered most likely to follow Washington and Oregon this year, Washington and Colorado this year, are Oregon, a very liberal state, and Alaska, a very Sarah Palin-y conservative state. Does that make sense to you?
It sure does, actually. So cannabis is a topic that's really uniting people of all different political backgrounds. It really is something that, on the spectrum of political preferences, really most people can find something they like. Some people want to talk about the tax revenues that can bridge budget gaps. Other people want, the government out of their business. And that's where Alaska comes in with the libertarian perspectives.
And actually, we noticed something interesting, if I may jump in, that the states that were the first to go medical are now becoming the states that are the first to go legal. And that was really kind of a connection we made recently. If you look at the first six or so, those are the ones that are most open, and possibly because they have the longest experience.
The rise of the libertarian wing of the Republican Party, which values individual liberty on things like this, is really interesting. Of course, libertarianism cuts both ways. It can support legal gay marriage on the basis of individual rights, or support that Arizona bill to allow any business owner to refuse to serve gays and lesbians based on the owner's individual rights. So libertarianism is fraught, but it seems to tilt in the direction of ending marijuana prohibition right now, hence Alaska. You write that the similarities between alcohol prohibition and marijuana prohibition are staggering. Both empowered criminals, both had racist roots, both prohibitions hurt ordinary users more than producers, both started to break down under the weight of a struggling economy. That's a lot. Let's look at some of those similarities. Why do you say racist roots?
Oh, gosh. If you look at what was happening in this country around the time that we prohibited cannabis, it was, where we get the word marijuana, it was linking it to Mexican immigrants. And what was really kind of interesting at the time was that we had cannabis. We had medical cannabis tinctures. We had hemp. But everyone called this plant hemp or Indian hemp. People weren't calling it marijuana. But then when Anslinger was pushing this, the Marijuana Tax Act, all of a sudden you start hearing marijuana. If you look at a chart, the word marijuana was practically non-existent before 1937.
And but that was a term that Mexicans used for the drug?
That's what people say, that their origins are in Mexico. Actually, there's so much confusion about where marijuana comes from. So, William Woodward, who was the legislative counsel for the American Medical Association, actually testified at this hearing and said, why are we calling it marijuana? You know, if you're calling it marijuana, people don't realize what we're outlawing. So that was kind of an interesting thing. And if you look at with alcohol prohibition, a lot of the conversation was that, you know, and it was horrible that alcohol turned, you know, black men into beasts, that it made them violent, that it would make them go after white women. And so it was always this thing with the early prohibitions that saying in some way we were rescuing whites from these sort of minorities, and that we were rescuing minorities from themselves. There was a lot of that aspect with both prohibitions.
So you prefer the word cannabis. The subtitle of your book is refers to cannabis prohibition. Do you use them interchangeably?
We don't really actually use them interchangeably. The only time we refer to the plant as marijuana in the book is either for historical purposes or within a quote. And, you know, I wrote the medical chapter, and I think the reason we actually settled on cannabis was because when I was talking to scientists, that's what they used. So, you know, I figured why not follow the people who are doing the research on this plant.
And what is cannabis? Is that an ingredient or is that another name for the plant?
Cannabis is, yeah, so the plant is, cannabis actually includes both what we know as hemp and what we know as marijuana. And that was another actually, you know, another incentive to use that word is that what we're seeing is actually the end of a hemp prohibition with the farm bill. You've got states that are allowing hemp, you know, now have the ability to grow it, to research it. So that was part of the reason. But yeah, cannabis sativa is, that's the actual plant's name. Marijuana, ganja, weed, pot, these are all slang names for cannabis.
Journalist Allison Martin and Nooshin Rashidian with me, authors of A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. And both prohibitions, cannabis and alcohol, you write, started to break down under the weight of a struggling economy. The Depression, of course, helping bring an end to alcohol prohibition. And the Times article today put some numbers on this for now. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper now says year one of legal pot sales will bring $134 million in state tax revenue. Rhode Island is cited as a state where financial problems are seen as a boon for the legalization movement at this moment. Is that a good reason, though, to legalize something? I mean, we have a robust debate in New York these days about casino gambling expansion. Great for local tax revenues, questionable for quality of life. And we've had it over gay marriage. You know, Governor Brewer vetoed that Arizona bill to avoid business boycotts. She never said discrimination against gays by private businesses is wrong. So is revenue a good enough reason?
I think it's a good enough reason to consider the conversation or to start the conversation. You know, it's not just – so Governor John Hickenlooper said he estimated $1 billion in sales and $100 million about – or just over $100 million from the special tax, which is 10%. And I do think that, you know, like I was saying with the budget gaps, it is a reason for some of these states to consider it.
I wouldn't say it's the – I wouldn't say that – I don't think we would be where we are today if that was – all this movement had going for it, right? I mean, I think that this is just yet another – I mean, the really interesting thing that the movement's done over these past few years is really align – you know, when California had their effort, Prop 19, they didn't even say legalize. It was like regulate and tax. And so then you start hearing it's about, you know, the racist arrests we see across the country. It's about the fact that it's, quote, safer than alcohol, which is what Obama then said in his interview with David Remnick. Right. So you have – all these reasons that if they stood alone might not be as powerful as they are when you start combining that with, you know, violence in Mexico, so on.
And not everyone believes public revenues will remain a net plus. States will have to spend more on treatment and prevention because with more use will come more abuse and more dependency and more problems that go with it, as happened with when alcohol prohibition ended. So we manage it, not ban it, but that costs tax dollars as well as brings them in, right?
Sure.
That's true. That's true. And a lot of – and one of the things that you hear a lot of the advocates say is that, well, those who are using it now – or the ones who will use it are the ones who are using it now, but – you know, that money is, instead of going back into the state, is going elsewhere, is going, you know, south of the border. So, you know, whoever's going to become, you know, let's say dependent upon this is not getting that option, is not getting the education. So if you look at where Washington and Colorado are devoting a lot of their tax dollars, I think they're so hyper aware of this reality, and it's overwhelmingly going toward treatment, prevention, education, rather than just willy-nilly.
Right.
So I think they're trying to mitigate that.
Let's talk a little more history, because there's so much interesting history in your book. You trace cannabis prohibition to about 75 years ago. Was it legal in the United States before then?
Yeah, it was legal in the sense, yeah, I mean, there weren't a lot of laws regulating. Well, before 1937, so between about 1911 and 1933-ish, a lot of states began to pass laws to limit its use for just hemp and just medicine. So that was, it actually was a movement. The prohibition really began in the states, which is interesting because now the states are pulling away. But it was, but people weren't using it overwhelmingly for recreational purposes. It was overwhelmingly for the hemp. The hemp was seen as something that really helped this country gain strength.
The utility.
Right. And actually, after it was banned, you
meaning for other purposes than getting high?
Right, right. We're talking for, yeah, the seeds, the oil, the
fibers.
Fibers for the rope and sails and tents. I mean, when you look at the founding of this country, it was, you know, like oil for the lamps. I mean, it was just seen as something that was, you know, there's a really great quote that they say that it's use in the book. It's the use but it's an industrial use that makes it really powerful, not its intoxicating you. So I think the real recreational use. Sorry, go ahead.
And also interesting historically, I mean, people debate medical marijuana, like that's kind of a recent concept. But your book notes that for almost 100 years until 1941, cannabis was listed in the official U.S. pharmacopoeia. And you quote a 19th century Irish physician, Dr. William Shaughnessy, is it, who was using cannabis to treat rheumatism and said he had found no better medicine at that time as an anticonvulsive and antineuralgic.
Yeah, and it's actually really interesting. I went through some documents and found a case study that he listed where the quote-unquote overdose was basically a patient who was very lethargic for a few hours, and then he woke back up and there were no problems associated. So I thought it was pretty interesting that case was from the 1800s, and that's basically what people are seeing today, too, as far as medical cannabis.
Well, it'll be interesting to see the political debate over the next few years, and then what cultural changes do come for better and or worse, as this inevitably, it seems, happens in more states now after Colorado and Washington, and some of the history traced so interestingly by Allison Martin and Nooshin Rashidian in their book, A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a New York City trivia quiz with Christopher Wynn, author of the book, I Never Knew That About New York City. That'll be fun. And folks, this will be your chance for you to stump him and me with your New York City trivia questions if you can get one of his right. So think about those New York things that you know that you think I might not, or even the author of a book on New York City trivia might not, and get ready to call in with them. We'll have some fun with Christopher Wynn, author of I Never Knew That About New York City, coming up next.